Blog Talk Radio.
G'day from Australia. It's Errol Grey here. Kelly's been kind enough to play my songs on his show, so I hope you've got a laugh out of them. Anyway, the sun's getting hot, the beer's getting cold, and the whiting are biting, so I'm going fishing. Good luck with the ducks, and I'll catch you later.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kelly Outdoors. A couple things first before we get to our guest who's sitting here patiently waiting on me because I'm a fool taking up his valuable time on a Wednesday night. First of all, big shout out to the guys over at callingducks.com. We're one of the sponsors over there, and they actually kind of co-sponsor us, so they let us do some trade outs and stuff, and I really appreciate that. Brand new this last week, we worked out a deal with the guys over at Duck Hunting Chat. Chris over there, you know, he's been kind enough to let us work with him and his stuff, and I want to say thank you very much to him and the guys over there at Duck Hunting Chat. Another big announcement, as many of you know, the Refuge got bought by some folks over there in Kentucky. There's been a lot of speculation as far as what's going on with that and everything, and we're going to have a show coming up here in the not-too-distant future. We're going to talk about that a lot. Anyway, make a long story short, we're still on board over there as a sponsor, and sometime in the very near future, it looks like we're going to be doing a lot more work with the guys over there at the Refuge. So, anyway, I wanted to shout out to those three places. If you guys aren't from around here, and I know there's a huge audience tonight listening in from over in New Zealand, those are places where you guys can go and find out all kinds of stuff about duck hunting and goose hunting. I mean, it's a great place to go and a great place to check out. So, anyway, you can find them on the web. It's pretty easy. You guys know how to do that. So, anyway, make a long story short, tonight we have one of the people that has probably done more to promote the sport of waterfowling in the United States in the last 35 years, probably done more of that than anybody I can think of right offhand, with the exception of one gentleman who is no longer with us, but was a very close personal friend of this gentleman, had a lot to do with him. They were good buddies. They did a lot of stuff together, and that was Charlie Hess. And the guy tonight that's with us tonight, his name's Tim Grounds. Tim, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, buddy.
Well, that has yet to be seen.
Yeah, well, you know what? You don't know until you try it.
There you go.
That's right.
Well, I'll tell you what. Just a little bit of background on all this. Years ago, when the show first got started, I called to talk to Tim, and I sent him a couple emails begging him to come on the show. And you know, he's a busy guy this time of the year. And of course, when our show started off, it was right in the middle of the hunting season. So Tim graciously begged off and said, I can't really take the time to do it right now, but, you know, give it a while and I'll see what I can do. Well, you know, got my head all squirreled around thinking I was all that in a bag of chips and went on and did other things and got other guests, and so that's all fine and dandy. And here we are almost 3 years, actually 3 years later, and I get an email from a gentleman in New Zealand telling me that Tim had just come home from a hunt over there, and he was all jazzed up about hunting with Tim, and he wanted to get him on the show because, you know, he think it'd be great to have him on the show and let you guys see another side of Tim that you haven't seen before. And so Jeff sent me the text message, and I got a hold of Tim, called him or sent him an email, and he sent me back. Anyway, make a long story short, between a lot of pressure from the crew over in New Zealand and me pestering him a little bit, he's decided to come on the show. So I'm very thankful that you've taken your time to do it. So
it's my pleasure. I mean, I did have a good trip. Short scenario on that trip, Rick Stevens is an importer over there, and that's how this all come to pass. He flew me, and I bought Hunter's plane ticket, took care of all of our expenses, and I was fortunate. I'd talked to Jeff Irvine back and forth on email, and then sometime he'd call, and just a super guy. And like you said, we talked earlier before we went on, that the country is something to see. They have no migration over there, so they know what tough birds are, even if they have liberal limits. But it's I met a lot of good people, and I just want to—I don't know if Rick's listening, but I just want to tell Rick that I appreciated him. There's 40,000 waterfowlers in the country, and they have very, very, very long seasons. But they, just like us, if anybody's breathing and can see what's happening in this world today, as far as weather we've never seen, droughts, rain, and I want to throw out everybody, keep Hurricane Isaac and the people in New Orleans and that hurricane path. you know, it's terrible. Somebody's got to go through something bad for us to get something good, because we need rain.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, you've seen this. I was watching tonight on the news where this father and son rescued 123 people off the roof. They're in the same shape they're in before. So, you know, don't need to talk about that anymore. We just need to keep them in our prayers.
Right.
Because, I mean, they're going through some, you know, but we need rain. But it's bad to see, you know, people's got to be through misery for some other part of the country to get something else. And I've never seen weather like we've had here this year. And that's the same thing we experienced over when I was in New Zealand. You know, they'd not seen, you know, it was warmer, but because their season is just the opposite of our season. You know, we're getting ready to go into fall. They're getting ready to go into, I guess, spring.
Right.
But it was a great culture. Did meet some good people, and if anybody's ever got an opportunity to go to New Zealand, they're very appreciative. And the culture, I think that anybody would enjoy meeting the folks over there. And Jeff and Rick is great advocates of what New Zealand's all about. And also Greg Dooley, he has the magazine in New Zealand. I mean, the magazine, like our Sporting Clay magazine, the slick
right.
cover, the fan. You know, he's the man. I mean, he is the guy that does the research, the ballistics, and all. I mean, super, super, super people. But Jeff and Rick and met some others, and Greg was just the hospitality was unmatched.
Well, I've heard lots of good things about New Zealand, as I told you before. It's on my short list of things to do. I definitely want to get over there and see it. From everything I've been told, it's absolutely beautiful.
It is pretty. I mean, we went from one end. We didn't make it all the way to the South Island, but we went from, and they, you know, the bad part about it is I got off the airplane. I went to get in the passenger side, and the steering wheel's on the wrong side. So that happened to me regular. I'll tell you what, you wouldn't want to drive over there because it was different. I mean,
yeah.
Because it was totally different. I mean, I'd be in a wreck in a minute. But that just different cultures. That's what they're used to. But I mean, Rick had a little snicker when I went to get in. He said, get in. You know, he said, get on the other side. I said, well, what do you mean, get on the other side? You know, steering wheel. I mean, but that's just different things I wasn't used to. You know, and anybody else would be the same way. He said, that was fun. I knew he was going to do that. So.
Well, you know, the thing about that, besides the fact they drive on the wrong side of the road, you know, when I was talking, I got listeners over there that keep in touch, and they live in Auckland, which is
right.
I guess that's the northern
right.
part. And I guess there's actually no close season on ducks or geese. And is there limits or no limits on
ducks? I tell you what, in different places there's, and I might be, you know, like I said, I might be wrong on this. I know there's no limit on the geese, Canada geese.
Right.
But they don't migrate. And I know before we got over there, I know this for a fact. They're a nuisance. And, you know, I really hate to call Canadian goose a nuisance because they give me everything I've got.
Right.
Man made them a nuisance. Now, over there, we'll talk about that a little later, but over there, they don't migrate. The ducks don't migrate. They'd killed 17,000 of them out of a helicopter. Before I got there, they done told me, Rick had told me that they just, because there was devastating the crops. And it's sad to when you have to do something like that we some of us live to do, and then we call it a nuisance season around here,
huh.
which that over there was just total destruction. But I mean there's no limit on the geese. We've seen 100 geese the first day, and two of the bunches, they said, "Nah, there's no reason to call them; they're too far." Well, we pull them half breeds out and. To this day, that's the killingest thing I've ever blown as far as killing them. I mean, it's like that old bait you pull out of your tackle box, man, they ain't biting. They was in our face, and they said, we ain't never seen anything like that. We've seen 100 geese, and we killed 65 of them.
Why, I mean, when you say you used your half-breed, is that because
the pitch.
The
I
loudness?
I mean, it was just, you know, when you're sitting a lot of times when the sun's out, most of the time when the sun's out, you hear, huh? before you hear, even think about Sam, you don't hear none of her. You hear the decimal because the geese have got 10 times the hearing. Animals have 10 times the hearing, ducks and geese especially, 10 times the hearing. If a turkey could smell, he's lucky he can hear, because if he could smell, we'd never kill him.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, with a deer, they pull their ears up, they hear. A duck and a goose, their hearing is 10 times what we hear. So in certain conditions, it's my belief, and the thing I always tell people is keep an open mind when you're waterfowl hunting or hunting anything, because if you ever run into somebody who says they know it all, the best thing to do is get as far away from them as you can. But nobody knows it all. God knows it all. That's all. That's all I got to say. But the pitch, you know, we just started screaming, and just as hard as we could scream at them, just as high pitched as we could get, and they come on a line. And before they could say, we're not going to get them, they're going here, we killed them.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, they was amazed. But we wasn't fortunate. That day there, I think right after we left, they got in some more geese. But that day there, we killed them geese, and then we had some days that we hunted the lake with Greg Dooley. And then I was gracious enough to hunt with, which would have been an unbelievable deal, at this, I guess it was irrigation pond. It would have been unreal. There were several thousand ducks going in there. If Jeff's listening, he's just smiling, and it would have been unbelievable. But it was just not. Should I say there was too many bosses and not enough workers?
Uh-huh.
If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, it was just. There was too many people had ideas. When I looked at it, I said, you know, a couple dozen decoys, this is going to be unbelievable. Because in certain zones, the way I understand it, it's 25 and 50 on the ducks. And this would have been, these was mallards too. I mean, they was it was unreal. I mean, you know, when they're going in there, I didn't think they'd leave when they went in there. Because a lot of times when the ducks go in there, there was some grass in there. A lot of times when ducks go in, as late as I've seen them going in, I didn't think they'd leave. But a lot of times when ducks, they spread out, they're relaxed, and they're getting ready to roost. But when they go get together, they get all dark. A lot of times they're fixing to leave. And they did that. They left. But when we come back, they were coming back, but there was too many. It was like a circus. It wasn't a good thing. I better not say nothing else. But, I mean, a good thing could have been unbelievable.
Uh-huh.
But there was just too many players in the game. But... And Jeff was so apologetic, and I said, "It's not your problem. You know, you didn't do none of this. It was just miscommunication."
Yeah.
But it would have been a hunt to remember for a lifetime. You don't get many days like that. You don't get many opportunities in life like what was going to happen there.
Right. I hear you.
But you know what? I didn't. I'm never one to say we're going to do it this way. We're going to do it this way. You know, when I'm a guest, I'm a guest.
Right.
No matter what I've what my experience has been in the past, I'm a guest, I just made some mentions that evening. You know, a couple dozen decoys is all we need, and there was 300 decoys out there, or whatever, and they was. I don't know, man.
Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, everybody listening to this show at one time or the other has been someplace doing something with somebody. And they're a guest, so to speak, and
mm-hmm.
they see those folks struggling, trying to make something work right, and you know what they're doing, you know how to do it, you can do it faster, better, smoother, whatever the case may be, but you don't want to step on anybody's toes or hurt their feelings, because even though
I didn't
want to
hurt their feelings, that's the
yeah.
whole deal. I
yeah,
tried
exactly.
to be very, very subtle and say, you know, this is what we need to do, we can, you know, as far as that goes, we can... Just three of us could go, and then three of us could go, and then three of us could, you know, because it would have been endless. It was,
right.
I mean, it was a giant X in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it was just automatic.
Well, you'll get to go back again, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And just, you know, say, okay, we did it your way once, now I'm going to show you how this is done.
But, I mean, you know, we had a banquet that night, because we did talks all up the Big Island, then we went almost to the end of the South Island. And, you know, I met some great people, and I met them folks that night, and I still have nothing. You know, they just wanted to put a show on,
Right.
And, hey, that's just the way I tell people a lot of times. Yeah, you can blow a call, but the best thing to do is keep it in your pocket today. Let's get them. Because, you know, when they're coming, anybody can look like Superman.
Right.
When they're not coming, when you got to maybe pull some tricks out. This was a no-brainer.
Well, you got to put yourself in their shoes. They're over there. They're, you know, they don't get a whole lot of exposure to this sort of thing. They've seen how many of your videos, how many times have they seen your son on the TV doing his thing and the videos, and they know your calls. And so, like you said, you know, they're trying to put on a show. They were trying to impress Tim Grounds, you know.
Well, they was tell you what, they was great hosts. But I've been to Argentina and Mexico and Canada, some of the best I've ever seen. That would have been one of the best shoots I've ever seen in my life.
Huh.
And it would just been, just load your gun, you know. Yeah. But, I mean, you know what, I was very, very quiet, and I have no remorse against anybody there. My buddy Jeff, you know, he drove down there to hunt with us. And, I mean, but you know, things happen in life. You know, and it was just, and it wasn't my personality, but it was some personalities that kind of clashed and didn't work out. But you know what? That's why they call it hunting instead of killing.
There you go. Well, you know, one thing, you kind of said this, those geese and ducks, they don't migrate. So, and the season's open like nearly year round. So to say that they're very well educated, I mean, they're not just dumb birds off the Canadian prairies, right?
No, I'm going to tell you something. That's just like these guys talking about when Hunter was in eighth grade, I took him to the Michigan Sanctuary for his eighth grade graduation. They say, well, you know, what the heck, you take him in a fence and let him shoot a deer. I learned more than in a week about deer. You know, all of us used to be when they walked by, if they had antlers, as a kid, you shooting.
Right.
Same thing over there. Them birds, they are in a fence in a country. A small country, and they do get educated, but they have such an unbelievable resource. But there is some, like Jeff and Rick and Greg, there is a handful of people that I met that was very, very knowledgeable as far as waterfowl, and I'm sure I didn't meet them all, but I know that I don't remember exactly the percentage, 40,000 waterfowlers in the country, and they all hunt the first couple of days, and then there's only about 10% of them hunt the rest of the season, and then the last two or three days of the season, they all, you know, half of them, 50% of them hunt again.
What's the population in New Zealand?
You know, I don't remember. I know Auckland. We went in there the last day. We was going to get some stuff. You know, it's I think about 1 million people there. I'm not really sure, but It's small comparable to the rest of the countries.
Yeah,
I know that.
Well,
but I met some phenomenal people, and I've got to take my hat off to Rick Stevens. I mean, he had the connections made and worked, and Jeff would tell you the same thing. I mean, he made, because see, they've got stores over there, and being him as a distributor, they've got stores like Cabela's or Cabela's, you know, the chains, Gander and Shields, and in America, they have what they call hunting and fishing stores. That's the name of them. And they're all individually owned. And they all, I guess they buy as a group. I'm not sure of that. But, I mean, you talk about some nice guys. I got to speak in a lot of the stores, me and my son. And, I mean, I said, we don't need all this. He said, you know, oh, yeah, we're going to take care of this. I said, hey, hey, I'm just an old redneck. You got to take care of me. And none of them. I can't say any of them I didn't hit it off with. Because, I mean, I didn't try to put a costume on, come in and say, I'm some guy from the United States and I'm better than you. I know I'm not, because I get out of bed a lot slower than I used to. And this old Wooly, I don't even remember the town he was in. He was a dandy. I mean, a dandy. He'd get along with anybody. He'd fit right in anywhere.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they all individually own them stores. All of them. But that's their big store over there. Is hunting
and
fishing.
It's called Hunting and Fishing?
What's the name of the stores? Yeah, yeah.
Well,
they're a smaller scale, but, I mean, they got all quality stuff.
Well, that's cool. I mean, a guy like me could be driving around without a clue. I bet I know what they sell there.
You know? Oh, no, I mean, there's some other places, but them's the places. That's the top. You know, it's like in the States. There's a lot of places, but, I mean, Cabela's is a well-known name.
Right, absolutely.
Max Prairie Wings. There's only one store, and it's a well-known name. But I mean, you know, they have one store. But I mean, as far as what I've seen over there, that is their Cabela's.
Okay. How would you rate their food and beer?
I tell you what, excellent. The beer was excellent. The food, they think Americans waste food. A lot of times I was, it's small proportions.
Right.
Very small proportions. I mean, I can't remember this one fellow's name, but I mean, I think they export, being as a small country, he had like, I don't know, he had 400 or 500 head of cows, and he's a super nice guy. I can't remember his name right now. But they lived on this great big hill, and they had a big boat they took us out on trying to catch a fish. But they export 12%, because being there, the country's so small, it's 12% of dairy in the world, and they export 8% because they only need 4%, something like that. I'm not exactly, don't hold me to that, but he was There was more there than what I needed. I mean, it wasn't, but I'm just talking about proportions are smaller. But they think Americans waste food, because I invited his two girls, if they ever come here, if they ever come to the United States. They went to college in the United States. Terrible, I can't remember his name, but I think that comes with age. But I mean, it was we was treated like royalty. I said, we don't need all this stuff. I said, you know, I said, we're not the president of the United States here. We're just normal people. And then they seen that, and after about 30 minutes, you know, I said, everybody just relax. I said,
if you were the president of the United States, they'd have probably been throwing rocks at you.
You got that right. You got that right. I'll go with you on that one.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you had a great time. I'm glad Jeff got in touch with me and kind of put this all together and pestered you. I heard you had some second thoughts, and then he pestered you and made some long distance phone calls. And
yeah, Jeff is a super super. Like I said, the three that I, and there were some other ones, and I just if they're listening, I'm sorry, but I'm faces. It's hard. I don't forget, but names. Sometimes I forget my own.
Oh, I hear you. We've got enough going on there with New Zealand. Let's go ahead and, oh, by the way, everybody, just in case you want to know, Tim said he would take some calls tonight, okay? So if you want to call in on the show, if it sounds like I'm struggling and you have a question, by all means, do. Area code is 914-803-4025. Once again, that's 914-803-4025, and we'll start taking some calls here in a little bit, okay?
So, good or bad, negative or positive, I got big shoulders, and we can take it all.
Okay. You got to be careful with this crowd.
Sound like Kent Cole.
No. Good Lord, don't.
Yeah.
No, I understood you too clearly. You need to get a load of dip in your mouth right now.
Oh, no. No, I can't handle that.
Anyway, one of the guys in the chat room is Jeff. He's from out in the West Coast, and he's a huge, huge waterfowler. And he wants me to tell you that your mom is the greatest customer service in the country, greatest customer service person in the country, and you don't pay her nearly enough.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, I can't pay either one of them. Dad just turned 76, and Mom is 74. She'll be 75 here shortly, and they won't take a penny. That's old school. You know, the thing about, you know, a lot of people, when they retire, nothing goes on, and they die. You know, and you know, my mom's always right. Regardless, because if she wasn't right, there have been a lot of times that I, you know, she is right. When you're, if you have a mother living, you don't argue with it, because she is right. You know, they won't take a penny, and that's one thing that I will say. The customer service that we give our customers, that's why I don't travel anymore, because there's me and Hunter, Mom and Dad, that's it.
Well, you know, instead of paying them, maybe what you could do is knock off some of the rent you're charging for that mobile home they live in right now.
Yeah, they don't live in a mobile home. They don't live. I mean, it's not no big fancy thing, but I mean, you know, it's, you know, as a lot of us got killed in that stock market deal, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, it's not, they're not as good as they was, but I mean, as long as I got a penny, they'll have half of it or three fourths of it or 7/8 of it or whatever, because you ain't got but one mom and dad in this world, and that old school stuff's forgotten.
Well, I'm glad to hear that they're working with you. I mean, that really is. That's pretty cool. I mean, they're only around for so long, you know.
You know what? The thing about it, it seemed like Hunter, he was just born yesterday, and he's 25. So I mean, and I was 30, and now I'll be 55 in January. So yeah, it don't take long.
Oh, I hear you. I wasn't a daddy until I was 33 years old. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm 55 now. I'll be 56 in December.
Yeah.
All right, our oldest one is 22. Our youngest one, Hunter, also, just turned 14 a couple months ago. And, I mean, it's just, I swear to God, it's like last weekend I took him out deer hunting for the first time when he was 5 years old. And now the kid's like 6 foot something, and he's playing football, and he's just a beast. You know,
right.
He's like, where'd all that come from?
What
happened the last 10 years?
Yeah, you can't,
anyway.
Tell you what, you can't, that's you know, and that's what's so bad now. There's so many, because it's just me and Hunter. I've had a custody of Hunter since he's been 7. But, I mean, I always told myself if I ever had a child, I'd try to do everything I could do to make it work. Just because it's not his fault he's been there. God picked you as parents. You didn't run in here by fate. We was all picked. My mom and dad was picked by God. And, you know, and they spit me out. So, boy, they was in trouble then. You know. My sister and my brother, I mean, my brother's a youth minister, and he's been all over the United States, different churches, and I was just kind of the black sheep. But, it's not chosen. We're not picked. There's one guy that picks everything, and he kind of controls a few things.
Yeah.
Like everything.
Well, let's talk about you and the industry. What was about 35 years ago you kind of really got into this? Just tell me from the very beginning, and I don't mean from birth, all right?
Right.
Talk about what you were doing and how you kind of got into this and when you made the transition into this full-time and got out of your full-time job that you had.
Well, I did everything but sell cars.
Okay.
I'll put it that way. I will tell you one thing. God gave me that gift to be able to sell. And you know what? There's so many people that sell stuff that's they're just a good salesman. Like I always say, a good car salesman, can sell you one that's dripping oil and it's got 300,000 miles and had a haircut. But, I mean, I've never tried to sell a gimmick. And that was kind of more or less taught through just upbringings, old school. My dad was had 13 brothers and sisters. So, I mean, he whenever the dollar, his two oldest brothers made sure they had 20 cents to go to get popcorn and soda and go to I've heard that story, I don't know how many times Dad tells me that story, and go to the movies. So anyway, I got started, my grandfather and my dad took me hunting. My grandfather took me goose hunting. And we knocked down a big gander, or they did. I wasn't 6 years old. And he just had a broken wingtip. I didn't know it. He said, go out there and get him. And he had that mammoth cave just dripping out the side. He's just laughing. That goose got me down, and I mean just flogged me to death. And I thought, that just kind of put a fire in me. I thought, you know what, I'm going to figure these things out. So one thing led to the next, and I just had a passion for, couldn't sleep before squirrel season.
Whoa, stop, back up, stop.
Yeah.
How about an ass-whipping did the goose give you?
Oh, man, he beat me to death. Big one. And Pop was just sitting there laughing. And my cousin, Rick, came out there and got it off me, and I...
Oh,
I mean, it was a big gander. I mean, people don't realize how strong they are. Just a broken wingtip. I mean, he stood up, and I was ready. I was, Pop said, go get him, so I went to get him.
You were 6 years old. You were probably eyeball to eyeball with him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. So long story short, that deal there, and then Dad would carry me in. He'd carry me in on his shoulders to, wait in spots, the scatters and Oakwood Bottom, scatters mainly, and rabbit hunting and squirrel hunting and just got into the healthy stuff. These people out here, and I don't care if what any of them say out there, if they shouldn't be listening to this thing if they're anti-hunters or tree huggers. So they can just push the button and get off. Because God give us this stuff to do, to harvest, because we're not the big predators for these animals. Disease and Mother Nature is. I mean, the skunks and the foxes and the raccoons and all. I mean, they're the ones. We're only about, just like my old buddy Robinson, he said, you know, we ain't but about 12 or 15% of the predator. So you know what? It says in the Bible, kill. That's what you do when you hunt. You don't want to cripple. You want to kill, and that's what my grandpa, he come out there and wrung that goose's neck, you know. I'll never forget that. And he had, like I said, that he had that stuff. I don't know if you know what Mammoth Cave is, that twisted tobacco.
Yeah.
Oh, he'd always, you know, but he was a good man. That's my mom's dad. But anyway, so when I got a little older, you know, when you get in your teens, you know everything. And I was just a normal teen, so I knew everything. So I got a part-time deal at a place by the name of Bill Moniker's Goose Club. And Southern Illinois used to have 150,000 geese, you know, in peak migration. And it was a fun deal, and I was just like the new kid on the block. So I went to running my mouth, you know, instead of listening. Upload a conventional call, which we make one now called an old school, and we're going to talk about the calls later. But a conventional was a resonant cavity call. There's four different kinds of goose calls: a tube call, resonant cavity call, a fluke call, and a short read call. And I was blowing a resonant cavity call, and 877 in a Ken Martin. You know, that's all we had that I thought of. I didn't think of a fluke call being a killer. So, you know, I was 16. Well, I was graduated in 76, so I was a junior in high school. So I got these guys, and I was in a pit one day, and this one, not real, not he's probably he was probably in his late 40s. His name was Abe Lewis, and the last time I've heard of him, I've got a phone number. It's not connected now. He moved to Costa Rica and married a lady there, and he's a pretty unique individual, and I think a lot of him. He's what really got me kind of fired up about these calls. So he was in one pit 200 yards away, and then I was in another pit 200 yards away, and I said, well, we're going to get him. You know, ain't no problem. We killed two. He killed two sets of hunters out, which would be two geese apiece, four hunters, two and two. Like, two guys killed out, and two more guys went in there with him. We're going to have that pit next tomorrow, so... We only killed three, and he killed another set of hunters out and almost killed another set of hunters out. And I had to swallow my ignorance, should I say, and go up to Abe and say, man, I got to learn how to blow that. What's the deal? I always thought they would sound like party horns. Well, what he did was on the original A-50, Jim Olt, there was a bell on it, and there was a little tiny hole in the end of that bell. And all that was to control the back pressure to make it where anybody could just go, and it would make a goose sound. So we took the bell off, is what Abe showed me. We took the bell off, and we modified the guts in there and modified the reed. And after Abe showed me that, then the way that he operated the call was putting the air into it clear, blowing. Where you blow into a resonant cavity call or blow into a fluke call, you pop the air into a short read call. So the fluke call, I modified thousands. He said, you can put a little extra money in your pocket. And that's why I was still working. I mean, I've always had a full-time job. But I've literally modified thousands of them A-50s. Matter of fact, Olt would send me the parts, and I would buy the parts. But that was a transition, running sporting goods stores. Walmart tried to get me to go to work for them to go to set their sporting goods up modular. And I that's not what I wanted to do. Because the bad part about me when hunting and fishing, when hunting season came in, I didn't want to work. I wanted to hunt. And that's not, that don't pay real good.
Was that call, the one you were modifying, was that... One of the guys is asking, is that what came to be known as the guide's best?
That is the guide's best.
Okay.
Yeah, and the guide's best come out in 1988 when I finally did all the stuff I had to do by hand.
Uh-huh.
It came out in 1988, and like I said, everything is meant to be. That's the first year I won the world.
Okay.
So, you know, I won a lot on the A-50 modified, but it just happened to be. That's the first year that we come out. We made in 1988. We come out with The Guide's Best, and Mike McLemore passed away about 2 months ago. He was another real good friend of mine, a mentor as far as to me. And he was the MC there at the World in Eastern Maryland. It's held there every year in the first 2 weeks of November. And we was doing the Mississippi, hunting the Mississippi Flyway in the Eastern Shore. And Mike, that's the only time that I ever hunted with Mike McLemore. We hunted with Tommy Dodd, and it was a one goose limit that year. Some of them listening probably knows the members the one goose limit on the Eastern Shore, and then they were shut down for, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 years. Probably one of the better places to goose hunt now because it's unbelievable.
I'll tell you, a lot of people in this listening audience don't know and have no concept of back in the 60s and the 70s how close it was to, you know, the Canada goose going by the wayside around here. I mean, the populations got just devastated, you know, for lots of different reasons. Hunting was not the one.
No, well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. You want to talk about man took wild out of the Canada goose's name, period. It wasn't us. I mean, it wasn't that. That's not the way it was set up. It was set up for geese to migrate from Canada, point A, and migrate. Birds of a feather flock together. They have so many in Canton, Illinois. They started that resident flock. They did not hunt them for 5 years. That got broadcasted. Oh my! You know what? And I thought it was I didn't think it was a bad deal because I didn't realize. You know, people coming down paying. You know, it used to be $25 a head, and then it got up to $50 a head, and $75, $120. A lot of them people was my friends in the Southern Illinois area. Eastern Shore was always higher when they start. But here's the thing: when you plant geese where God didn't plant them, they wasn't meant to be there. That's what's wrong with the conservation department today. They're putting otters, foxes, stuff that we didn't even. I mean, not foxes, coyotes. They're putting stuff that wasn't native to the area. When you mess with God's plan, you're going to have problems.
Yeah.
Now a goose, we've got a goose, which we have no-till farming. We have hot water lakes. We got way too damn many refuges. You know, if they're going to have these refuges, they need to hunt them. If it's handicapped or kids, not your accomplished hunters, but handicapped or kids or first-time hunters, I think if a couple days a week they should have places to hunt on the refuge, period. Because you know what? Without teaching them how big a deal it is, because a hunting license is a privilege. It's not a given. It's just like a driver's license. It's a privilege. It's not a given. And a lot of people take it for granted. But the migration, when they started building up around Chicago now, they got 100,000 geese up there in that vicinity. Them birds can't fly past there. They're eating French fries at a McDonald's parking lot. So the whole thing is, the ducks are going to continue to come. The specks and the snows are going to continue to come. But the Canada geese are not wild anymore.
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with the farming practices that changed a lot over the years. Because
the farming practices, if they hadn't planted them geese, they wouldn't have been there.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. But there's a lot of them that, honestly, they came so far south, and then they ended up staying. You know, instead of going
back. No, I'll tell you
what.
I'm going to tell you something. I'll tell you for a fact.
Okay.
The no-till farming, the migration. The migration, I can remember sitting out here and get down there in September when I was a kid. In September, because we never seen goslings. I mean, I had 30 of them raised here at my place this year. They're the nastiest things in the world. I mean, you know, that people think they was pretty, but I mean, they're nasty. But I still love them. But if you look in the dictionary, under nuisance, it says menace to society. I got a problem with that.
Right.
That's not right. But what I'm getting at is, they would come down here to Southern Illinois, the first northwest wind, and when they come down here, they didn't go back till the last of February, first week of March. Now, it takes snow to push them. Because see, ducks and geese have to have, if you get real hot and you go in, what I do is I go in and the best thing, if you get real hot, run cold water over your pulse on your wrists.
Right.
Ducks and geese have to have water or they'll freeze to death. They have to have their feet in water. They can't be without water for a long period of time. So it's just the opposite of us. I mean, it's not just the opposite of us. It's the same as us. But they're going to stay. That's why they migrate down the rivers. You know, it's hard. Sometimes they blow past us on a northwest wind. But they never left. When they got down here, they stayed. You never seen them in Tennessee because they started planting them. You never seen them in Virginia because they planted them. You never seen them in South Carolina. They planted them. Atlanta, they planted them. They planted all these geese because everybody thought it was a great idea. Well, you know what? If it's such a great idea, he'd have put them where he wanted to put them. He put them where they needed to be and where everything would work.
Right.
We don't need no nuisance season down here. There's kids down here, watch them raise on a pond, and they lay on the levee the first day, which is Saturday, I think Saturday this week, and they kill the whole family. That's not teaching even good. I feel bad shooting these things down here. In the season, we only killed 31 geese last year, Canadian geese. 31 of them, and I guarantee you 30 of them was local. One of them was banded, and it come from, I don't remember where it was at, but I'm going to shoot them if they come in there, but I'm not going to go out there and stalk them. Because everybody thought that was the idea of planting geese. It's already messed up because now they are, it'd be just like us, me and you, let's just say, we're going to go to this town, little town. We're going in there. We walk in this place, and they break your arm, and they knock my teeth out. Well, I guarantee you one thing. We're going to find out the ones to run with because we're not going to run with them guys. We're going to find the locals. What I'm telling you is me and one other guy was the only one that complained about it down here because when they started trying to raise these geese. I said, you know what's going to happen? The first time we have a weak winter and a weak migration, it's going to kill us because we're going to get them when they come down and they're going to mix in with them locals, and they all know the safety spots. Yeah, they can blame it on no-till farming. They can blame it on hot water lakes. They can blame it on global warming. That's all a bunch of garbage as far as I'm concerned. It didn't help anything? No. It didn't help nothing. But they always come because I seen them come down here when it got and they warmed back up. You didn't see them going back north. They was here until then. But now it's the snow has more to think. And if we don't get no snow down here, we won't have no goose hunting. Never thought that because Crab Orchard National Wildlife Refuge was 68,000 acres. It was the largest, at one time, the largest national wildlife refuge in the United States, which I think has changed now, and I can't say where the other, you know, where the largest one is, but it's a big refuge. And then Union County, I think, 6,000 acres, and Horseshoe is, I don't know, it's a smaller refuge, but I mean, they'd have 200,000 geese down there, and then across the river to Ballard County, they'd have 200,000 to 300,000. I mean, it was unbelievable.
When I was a kid, I always read about those places, you know, Horseshoe and those other places up there. And I always told Dad, I said, man, I'd love to go there. You know, because literally, I'm not kidding. When I was a kid, and we're about the same age, so
yeah.
When I was a kid, here in Kansas, it was unusual to see geese. I mean, you'd hear them flying over at night, okay, when they're flying at night.
It was going right on past, wasn't it?
Yeah. And you'd never get a chance at them. And I remember the one time that, man, we were out hunting ducks, and this bunch of geese came flying over the lake straight at us, and I had my first experience of buck fever that day. I mean, I was so nervous. I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And they came in. They flared at the last minute. They weren't coming to us. We were just happened to be in the way of the direction they were heading.
Right.
And, God, they were like B-52s, you know. And where you grew up over there, they were around all the time. You know, and so it wasn't that big a deal to you because you saw them all the time, you know. But
well, the thing about it, I seen them in the fall.
But you wouldn't see any of them here at all.
And we never. Just... But the thing about it, though, they was coming down. I guess Kansas is the Mississippi Flyway, right?
Well, central.
Are you in the central?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
the thing is,
I think their habitat, as far their habit of their migration, has changed a little bit. It's switched, and now we've got a bunch of geese resident, and they weren't planted. I guarantee you, they weren't planted. They just decided to stay because life's good, you know, and there's a lot of food and stuff. But and
so
now,
they didn't plant no geese anywhere over there.
I don't think so, boss. We planted turkeys. I know we put turkeys out like crazy, and now we got them beating up everything in sight. To, you know.
Oh, they're great. They're awesome. They're like rabbits.
Oh, they're great. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you this: all the geese that was in Southern Illinois, they was all planted, and I can tell you a lot of other states they was planted.
Well, you know what's weird, and please don't misunderstand.
Oh no no no!
But you make your money selling stuff to people that harvest geese, and you'd think that you'd be a big proponent of plant more, you know.
Well,
plant
you know
here,
what though?
That,
that's what everybody thought.
Yeah.
And not just in the call business, but that's in the club owners and all that stuff. They was thinking, you know, things was working pretty good, the way it was. And I thought, but I was when Canton did that, I thought that because them guys were still coming down, and we're not going to get to hunt them for 5 years. You know, you can come up and hunt with us. But I thought, you know, that'd be great. But you know what? If that was how it was meant to be, when you see a goose eating a French fry out of a McDonald's parking lot, it kind of makes you sick of your stomach.
Yeah, really. I mean,
have you ever?
Have you been to
Morrill Tomasetti's when he had Liz for Cure?
Uh-huh.
You've been up there, haven't you?
No, I never was able to make the thing. I just
the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation.
I was never able to make it up there, but I always sent calls and donated for that deal.
Right.
Matter of fact, I think you bought either one or two of the calls that I made out of Charlie's Wood after he passed away that I donated to that thing.
I got a big heart for that foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he not this this past year was the last year.
Right.
But I don't know how many thousands of dollars we raised. I mean, it wasn't growing, and they seen it wasn't. You know, it wasn't. It was the people. A lot of people that would come at first, they come to be recognized, but the ones that really had a heart was still there the last year.
Right.
And that's unfortunately that's how things go.
Well, I think you know what I would dare say that probably is going to get resurrected in the future because, you know, when the economy is, I mean. People
No, it was tough. But, I mean, what I'm saying is the economy made it bad, but still yet some of the ones that always said they'd be there, you didn't see their faces after things kind of. Because I tell them, forget the contest. The contest, anybody comes up here to blow in a contest, the contest he had to try to draw a good caller so he could draw people that wanted to hunt with him.
Uh-huh.
You know, let's come together for the right reason.
Right.
And that was, some of them come for the wrong reason. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, I wanted to go, but to be honest with you, that time of the year is a little rough with my other things that I got going on trying to get out
here.
Get
sure.
Time. I always thought
but,
it was.
But you didn't tell him you'd be there.
Huh?
You didn't say, I'll be there and did not show up. Well, see,
that's what
I'm talking about.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and Morrill, I mean, hell, he had the gambling night. He had they had the rooftop deal for when the Chicago Cubs, you know, they had a. But that Tomasetti family, you know, which little Liv, she's got cystic fibrosis, and they've come so far. I mean, the life expectancy is 30 or 31 now. And when we started, I think, I'm not sure, I think it was about 25, 26. So, you know, and they was doing a small part, which was a big part of the whole picture. But, I mean, it was a tremendous, it made me feel good. When I went up there just knowing, I didn't go there for a contest, I didn't go there for the hunt. I went there just to know that I was trying to do something for the right reason.
Yeah.
You know, and I told them I'd be there, I'd be there. There were a few years there I didn't feel like going. I had things I needed to get done down here, but you know what, when it came to that time and I got up there and after making that drive, after I told him I'd be there, I felt good about it. Good people, too. You know, there was, but what I'm saying is the first year, I seen the people that was there the last year, the ones that was in there for the long run, what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
You know, it ain't like I wanted to go, and then, I had some things going on. That's fine. But when you tell somebody you're going to be someplace, my dad always told me, your name's only as good as your word is.
Yep.
And if you tell somebody something, if you say, well, I'll try to make it, but if you tell somebody you're going to do something in this world, that's a forgotten art.
Yeah, that's true. Well, hey, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
One of the people on the website wants to ask, if you were, let's say you were a young gun and you knew all the people out there right now that are calling in the contest and everything, and if you were to go into a calling contest again, is there a caller, past or present, that you would not want to compete against because in your mind you didn't think you could win?
The best one I ever heard lives with me. That's the only thing. I mean, one reason that I kind of fell out of the things, I couldn't beat my kid.
Okay, but you can ground him so he can't go to the contest zone.
No, there's a lot of good callers out there, but I'll be honest with you, and I'm not being modest. When he puts his mind to it and wants to do it, I mean, I've kind of turned the teaching over to him. When he puts his mind to it, the level of it's the easiest way to explain it is, you know, I'm sure a lot of the listeners watched the Olympics, and they was all super athletes, but right. Like say in the gymnastics, it was a 2.9 or a 3.1. The level he does something at, if he hits it, is a 3.9, 4.1. Not saying the girl, the one that did it at 3.1 wasn't really good, but the level of difficulty, I wouldn't want to call against him.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, but I'm just telling the straight facts. Well, at 25 years old, he's won over 90 times individually, not counting teams. Youngest ever be retired from the world. Youngest to ever to be retired. Youngest to ever be retired from the world, and youngest to ever win the world. You know, and I get tired of this bullshit that I hear. You know, if I'm judging, he wins. Well, it's easy for Hunter to win when his dad's judging. Well, I sure in the heck ain't judged every contest he ever won because I was his worst critic. Period. Because I was, you know, the thing about it, if you can't, when we teach people, and I tell Hunter and anybody that calls here, I always tell them, I said, you know, we can help you if you can take criticism. Because if you can't take criticism, we're not going to praise you for just a little bit and push you out the door and make you think you're doing everything right. Very seldom he's ever won, and I've told him, you did a good job, bud. I'd always critique, you know, you should have did this. You could have hung this a little longer. You got too quick here, you know. But that's the only way that you can, but that's what I've been blessed with. A lot of people want to go on my website and see some of the names of the people that's making calls now. They'll see their names on there. That's where they's taught right here.
Right.
We got a list of every single one of them. I mean, I probably not all of them, but every one we can put on there. But, I mean, that's the truth. I mean, that's one I wouldn't want to call against.
Okay. Because
if he's on, you ain't on every day. You can't, you know, look at Tiger Woods. He's struggling.
Oh, yeah.
You can't be on every day. Michael Jordan struggled. But that's the ones I can compare him to because they had, when you get that eye of the tiger and you really want to go, but the thing about it, I had him in a goose pit and dragging him around these contests when he was 2 years old.
Right.
So he's 25 years old. When I was 25 years old, I was a lion. I mean, I was fired up and ready to go. He's burnt out. But every now and then something will fire him up, and I keep trying to tell him, I said, son, I ain't going to be here forever. So you're either going to have to figure something out here, because I said, this old horse don't run as fast as he used to.
Right.
But as far as a teacher, he's passed it on to what I've taught, and we've got some real, real good young callers coming up, and I give him all the credit. You know, I mean, that's a lot of the stuff that I learned. I learned, and we all learn from someplace. I learned from other people. I learned the biggest thing that I can tell that listener is stage presence. You cannot buy. That nerves will get you. 9 times out of 10, them nerves will get you. But you have to learn to be a good loser to be a great winner. And I told Hunter that all his life. I've got so many scars in my bottom lip, I know I should have won. No doubt.
Right.
But I didn't. But there's more people a lot of times come to see you get beat because when you do good in life, people want to beat you up. They want to run you down. They want to see you fall. They want to see you get in trouble.
Well, it's just like a NASCAR race. That's where everybody goes to those stupid races. It's not to see who's going to win. They want to see who's going to blow up, you know.
Most Hunter was 7 years old one time. I got a picture, and he's looking up at me. I said, you remember that? And two guys come up and patted me on the back and said, we come to see you win today. Man, I said, I'll do the best I can. I said, I don't know, and I won. I said, Hunter, you know what? I can tell you both them guys come see me get beat.
Yeah.
But I said, never let yourself get beat twice. Never show your attitude. Some of these young guys get their heads about the size of a pumpkin, or twice the size of a pumpkin. They think they're some God gift to goose if they're a little successful. They
right.
can make all the notes. They don't know how to call a goose. You put them on the X, anybody can kill a goose. That's the same with these boys in this calling contest. Because a lot of these judges now today, they couldn't get out of the first round of a contest, and they're a judge. impressive.
Tells you that tells you the sad state of the judging, because people don't want to do it because of all the criticism.
Well, I mean, but that's a fact. That's a fact. I tell you what, I did it for 2 years, and I said, hell with it. I got criticized so much because I tell you what, if I do know who you are when you walk out there, you better not stump your toe.
Yep.
I don't know how many times when Hunter was young, what'd you give me this score for? I said, because you had all them check keys. You had no level of difficulty. You didn't do this. You know, them boys of mine, they don't want me judging them. Them boys are blowing my calls. But there's so many of these contests today, you know, and I don't want to go in different directions. I'm not going to point no fingers. But there's so many of these things today, as soon as they hear a guy they want to hear, no matter how bad he is, he's going to win. Period. And that's what's sad.
That's not good.
No,
hey.
It's not good. It's going on. I know it's going on, because you'll see some of them make a little run. We've been doing this. We've been successful doing this, teaching these kids, and along with when I started, for four decades, west, east, north, south, it didn't make no difference where we went. We were successful. Now, if you had a little garage deal, like a whole lot of them was for a couple, 2 or 3 years, Hunter said, I ain't got a chance, Dad. I said, go. He get cut the first round. I knew he was going to get cut because it was already a stack and go. And
right.
then when they all come together, it ain't so stack and go, because it's a different story when it's on a level playing field.
Right.
And it's a level difficult. I call the difference between a wall of sound, because the whole thing is you got to listen to the last note, not write the score down when they're three-fourths of the way through the routine. Because if you mess up, you know, just like, you know, the stage stuff like when you go to the world, you know, when you try to qualify to go to the world at Stuttgart. If you make one little, when you make that one little bobble, you're done. 70 to 80, you get a 70. And Goose calling, oh, but he was so good after he'd made that one little mistake. Well, he lost control of his routine. So when you lose the control of your routine, or you do something that you're doing something really good, and you try to do one of them difficult notes and you don't do it real good, it takes away from your good, and you're done.
Right.
You know,
Question for you.
What's
you
that?
You talked about working with these people and stuff. This is for people blowing in contests. Do you guys also work with people that just want to learn how to use a goose call for hunting purposes?
Oh, yeah.
What do you charge
for
something like that?
I tell you what, here's the thing about it. We get people call and say, well, I don't want a contest call. I don't make a contest call unless you want it made like that.
Right.
All the calls we make, and we make 17 different goose calls, they're all hunting calls. If you want them made, the difference in a hunting call and a contest call, which is not with a lot of people, a lot of people's trying to make them so easy, and when you get about 30 miles an hour, they're going to stick and hang up, and they sound great if you just go. But if you try to put air into them and be able to make them perform and make them go as hard as you want them, they're going to stick and hang up on you. I pick too many of them up walking around these shows and these stores. They look pretty. They're real easy to blow or pop air into. I say blow. That's the difference in a flute. But that one thing right there is we can teach. It's not hard to teach them how to call it geese. But these young kids, they're so emphatic. And I can call a 25-year-old young now and a 30-year-old, okay? You know what that'd be like. Would you like to be 25 or 30?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, no shit. That's right. You know, I said, you kids, I'm this. I said, yeah, right. Wait till you get here. You
right.
know, but I mean, what I did is I turned the responsibility over to Hunter, because I can't make some of them sounds consistently on every single call that I pick up that we make. I've got to have it a certain way.
Well, if somebody wanted to drive over to your shop, let's say they live
$20 for 30 minutes.
How much?
$20 for 30 minutes. He gets $35 an hour.
Okay.
But the thing about it with people think, I had a guy flying here from California a couple months ago. And, you know, I told him, I says, you know, there's no way we can teach you because your mind is, it's just like learning playing an instrument. Your mind can only comprehend so much. That's just like when I took piano lessons. I learned something. I did that when I went to the next lesson, and we added something to it. And then we tried to put the lesson before that, the other two things together. It's all sequences. And the kids is listening and wanting to know the difference in calling geese and calling people. It's not quite as different. It's not the quite duck calling and goose calling. On the stage, duck calling is you have to more or less play a song. Goose calling, you can be more creative. But
okay,
you can't let them get lost.
Do they have to call and set the schedule up or whatever with Hunter? Is that how it does? Or do you guys have
yep.
on certain days you set
it up? No. You call it and schedule with Hunter because I've tried to give him more responsibility.
Okay.
I mean, and like I said, I mean, I taught him all I could teach him, and he's created things that, you know, some of the sounds that I've heard geese do. I mean, he don't do anything that geese don't do. You don't need all that stuff to call geese. You need a high cluck, a low cluck, a high cluck, and a moan, and get them in different cadences. That's the main thing about calling geese. I mean, and knowing when to keep your call in your pocket and use a flag.
All right, one more question.
Yeah.
All right, this comes from Joe out there, Joe Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the top five meat callers you've known throughout the country?
Duck or goose?
Goose, I'm assuming.
Goose, killers, callers. Well, I'd have to go with Al Dagger from Delaware. He would probably be in my top five. Alfie Lanham would be another one that would have to be in my top five. Brian Sullivan would have to be in my top five. Ben Stoner would have to be in my top five. And these guys have been around a lot of geese. And some of the callers that not taken away from none of the other callers, I'm talking about just down to earth killers, knowing when to make the sound. And this guy couldn't call. He wasn't just a great caller, but he knew when to make the sound, and it had a good spot. My fifth guy would probably be, well, there's a lot of them out there. I'm probably going to have to go with Steve Harpstrike.
Okay.
Now, three of them guys are local guys. But you know what? They've been around so many geese and went through the tough times. You know, Al, I met him in 1986 at the Nationals in Paducah, and he was blowing a conventional calls when I met Charlie and Keith. We talked about that earlier today.
Right.
And I just could not believe what he got out of a conventional call. Double clucking and everything else. It was just unbelievable. Blowing me away. And we become friends. You know, and that's what's good about waterfowling or hunting or fishing. You know, the people that you share interests with, that you love, usually most of them people's pretty good people. Unless they want to get in business. And that is another story. Because my back looks like a road map, all right?
I hear you.
I mean,
that's
another story. We're not going to even go there.
Nope.
But I mean, that's as far as, and there's a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of guys that I thought was good, because when I talk about with that question, I talk about when they know to keep that call in their pocket and just do what it takes to get them in there. You know, it's easy when you're sitting on that X. Mickey Mouse and Obama could get them in there. But when they're on the edge, you can't do it. They can't figure it out. I watched them when they come down here to Southern Illinois. Here's a good example. We had the International down here, okay? Callers from everywhere, they had to have that point system and all that thing. It had to be a $1,000 contest. They'd come down here, and they would blow their brains out. They didn't need to. Most of them sat out there until 3 o'clock before the banquet because they didn't need to, be, you know, but they was good callers. Don't get me wrong. They can make all the sounds, but they'd blow them out. And that you know, that's a big thing. I don't know, I've said that about three different times. But knowing how to blow a call and knowing how to call geese is two different things. Learning how to put your sections or your sounds together in cadences, in a high cluck, a low cluck, low cluck, a high cluck, and a moan, is the most important thing there is. If the wind's blowing really, really hard and blowing right in your face and you're blowing it right at them, or blowing against away from them, if they're listening to that and that wind's blowing them hard, if it's coming in your face, it's not as bad. But if it's behind your head and it's blowing right at them, if you just shut up just for a second too quick, when they turn sideways, they can be gone. They're like a kite. So sometimes it's you know, and it's all about, most of it's all about picking a gun up. To me, it's not about picking the gun up anymore. It's about, you know, watching somebody else kill something. Or somebody else have a good time. I've cleaned up all my life.
Right.
I mean that's what I did for a living. I mean that's what I did for 23 years. I guided, and you know people now I hunt with who I want to hunt with. My son, I missed some of my golden years with Hunter when he was growing up, but he always got to slide down there. You know, he was only supposed to have three guys in a blind here for a long time when Hunter was little. I told my wife, I said, bring him down there. If they want to write me a ticket for a baby in the blind, that's fine. You know, because, I mean, I was trying to teach him. And them guys said, get your son down here. I said, I got to have that dadgum diaper bag. I don't know if I want him coming down here or not. But you better have him down here.
Huh.
But well, let's go on. I don't know if that answered that boy's question.
Yeah,
One thing I will say to that fellow that called in, putting together a routine, a lot of people ask me, you know, we haven't come out with a tape for several years, okay, because of another individual. We're backing him and tried to build him up as much as we can, but he's no longer with us now, and he does have the best tape on teaching at this time, but the world's not seen the best tape on teaching this time because me and Hunter's going to do one on the total waterfowl spectrum. We're going to put everything on one DVD. It has not happened yet. He wanted to do it 2 years ago, and I was supporting. You know, I said that's his thing. That's what we're going to do. But things didn't work out. But we're going to come out with it. We're going to have a new DVD, and it's going to have everything. But one thing that we're going to teach on there, the way to put a routine together if you're in a contest, you have to think about it. Walk into a house. When you walk into a house and you put the key in the lock, that's when you start your routine. You open that doorknob. You have to know where that next doorknob's at before you get to that next section. Do not practice a routine. Practice sections. When you hit the doorknob to the next spot, when you hit that note, you know exactly where you're at. Because so many people in these routines, the biggest thing they do, they're thinking. And they'll be going, luck, 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 luck. And they're just the same. It's a check goose is what I call it. And when you're doing that check goose, that routine does not flow. It might sound good and powerful, but you're doing that. You're check goose because you're thinking where you're at. You always want to throw in a moan or a cluck or a spit note or something in there to make that routine flow. But if you will have you about five doorknobs and know exactly where you're at when you hit that doorknob, son, your routine will flow. And that's how we teach here. Your routine will flow, and I'm going to have a big segment of that on the. I don't even know what we're going to call it yet, but there ain't going to be nothing out there like it, I can tell you that.
Well, good. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Matter of fact, when you guys get that sucker done, let's get you and Hunter on the show and talk about it. We kind of have an intro. And
Hunter, I'll tell you what, Hunter would be a good, you know what, I'll tell you something. I had tickets to go to the Decoin Fair tonight, and I forgot all about it, the Eli Young Band and some other country band, and he was going. I said, you know what, it'd been neat if we'd have gone on the conference deal and you'd have been here with me, because it, you know, the thing about it, when he gives them lessons, I'll walk in and just listen, and I'll say, well, try this. Because you know what? Nobody knows everything.
Right.
And one little thing you might see and critique, because we're all about helping kids, because if we don't teach the youth, hunting and fishing ain't got a prayer, because we got the cards stacked against us.
You got that right.
You know, they won't take our guns. And
you know
something?
I'm
going to
say
this
right
house.
Here, right now.
Huh?
There's a lot of people in this industry. I said there's a lot of people in this industry that give that particular thing a lot of lip service. Okay? But when it comes to putting where the rubber meets the road, there's a lot of those same people just like up there with Liv's deal. Okay?
Yep.
They're all about mouthing it and talking about it. But when was the last time they actually took a kid hunting? All right? So.
Yep. I'm telling you right now, before they take my guns, there'll be a revolution.
Right.
I guarantee you. I mean, that's the facts. I mean, there's a lot of them like me. I'm pretty peaceful guy, but you know that's our constitutional right. And you know the bad part about it, Illinois is the only state that has no concealed carry.
Right.
Only state, which we've got two governors in prison now, and I don't know if this guy's going to make it or not, but that's another story. But anyway. the concealed deal, you know, it's like that. I went on a radio show right after that tragic. I mean, that was so sad when I heard that out there about Aurora, Colorado.
Right.
That was terrible. I mean, that was just insane. But that guy right there, if there would have been somebody in there with a couple concealed weapons, if there had been somebody in there, he might have not been able to, or him or her may not have been able to stop it. But it would have given an opportunity to maybe save a life or two or three or four or five or six or whatever.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, if you don't have the cards to play with, you don't have a chance. And I mean, you know, if they try to do what they want to do with the guns, the only people that's going to have the guns is the people that are criminals, and they're going to buy them someplace anyway.
Oh yeah,
you know, for the legal guy. I mean, you know what? I don't see anything at all with a guy if he's a gun fanatic and he likes shooting targets. He's AR-15s, and you know, if he goes to buy them legal, I've got a couple buddies that you know two couples, they go and they shoot every weekend. They love it. They got a safe place against the mound and everything. Them's not the people. Them's the kind of guns that's causing the problem. But don't blame it on you know law-abiding citizens. You know, that was a long time before these people say anything now. The people are saying stuff like that now. That was already done and said before they got here.
Yeah. Well,
let's not even get on gun control because I don't want to start that.
That can be an entire show in and of itself.
Oh, Lord.
Let's talk about your calls, okay? I know last year you guys came out with the Triple Crown Guts?
3 years ago.
3 years ago? Okay. I'm not up to speed.
Or 4 years ago. I mean, it's been a while.
Okay. Your line of calls, you got 17 different kinds of goose calls, correct?
Well, I'll tell you what, I told you I'm not good on notes, but I did write something down because we started with the guide's best. Like I said, I modified the May 50 since 77 or 75. Started with the guide's best. We went from the guide's best. What we did, we made a bell on the end of them, because I tried to get Jim Olt to drill the hole out in the end of that A50. And you know what? If he hadn't turned me down, I made a cassette tape, and sent it to Jim. Never met Jim face-to-face, but I wasn't one to try to, you know, and it was all meant to be, I guess, because I told him I would have never even thought about putting my modifications in that A50. But he told me that tape was too good to get people disgusted. It'd drive people away from wanting to blow calls. Because what I wanted him to do is drill a hole in the end of that bell to give it more volume. That's why we was taking the bell off and modifying it.
Right.
So what we did, we came out with a variable tone honker to where you could take the bell off or put it on. The bell, anytime you extend the length in a flute call or a short read call, you cut the back pressure down. So we come out with a variable tone honker.
When you extend the length?
When you extend the length of a barrel, you cut the back pressure down.
Oh,
because
of the barrel.
The air has to chamber, and it also has to do with how close your mouth is to the reed. Which, in a flute call, your mouth is very close to the reed.
Right.
Okay? So So I carried that on from the variable tone to 1986 Nationals when I met Keith and Charlie Hess. And the A50 would come from Abe Lewis. You know, he got me doing that, and I was doing that for 10 or 11 years since 75. And then we come to the half breed in 86. I won the Nationals on an A50. And Keith Hess came up and shook my hand. I sat in between David and Harold, Knight and Hale, and they said, just calm down. There was 39 guys there, and it was from everywhere, East Coast, you know. I went 2 years and didn't get beat, you know. So, but they wanted me to come out there to the world. So I went to the world, didn't make the first cut. We'll get back to that in a minute. So, but they wanted me to come because, you know, I can't stand this when they tell me, well, geese don't sound like this on the East Coast. Well, geese don't sound like this out the West Coast.
Oh, bat crap.
Bullshit. A Canada goose is a Canada goose anywhere you go. I've never did anything different. Anyway, in 87, we started playing with a half breed. Keith said, I want you to do something. You people listen to you, and we've been over in Henderson, and he'd come over, and we spent lots of hours, and I've got lots of prototypes, and different deals we cut off, and the half breed, the way we come up with a half breed, it was half between what he had and what I had. So, and we cut the flute call in half. So we did.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, it was a presentation of the air. The way he was putting the presentation in the air was all clear. And a guy by the name of Brent Dutton here in Marion, because a lot of these guys that blow a duck and goose call, you hear their diaphragm and their throat before you hear the sound, and they're overkilling themselves. It's too hard to blow. Well, back off, because it's got a lot of it built into it. They're almost like, you know, wipe your ass and go on, you know. The diaphragm usage with this guy was unbelievable. But he called me one night and he said, hey man, listen to this. And I heard him put his diaphragm into a flute call. I thought, holy crap, where are you going to be tomorrow, man? I said, I got to hear you do this. He said, I'll come by the shop. 15 minutes, I was doing it. But I was taught clear, okay, on the flute call. I was taught, you blow a flute call, and you blow a resonant cavity call with your cheeks out like you got two nuts in your jaws, okay? Uh-huh. When you constrict your diaphragm, your cheeks kind of get a little closer, but not quite like you do with a flute call, or with a short reed call. But anyway, we went to the half breed. Okay, we went through the half breed, and Keith showed me some concepts and showed me about shaving a reed a little bit, because a lot of these guys out here making calls, boys, anybody's listening, all they're doing is taking the shiny off the reed. They ain't got a clue what they're doing to a reed. I may get some criticism on this, but I was taught by the best. And I've taught a lot of the ones out there that's making calls now. I didn't teach them everything. Guarantee you that. I taught them. I was always taught to be honest. I taught them too much. But it's the difference in something going, ha! Instead of going, and just staying monotone. There's a lot of that monotone stuff out there, and they're easy to blow. And there's a lot of good calls out there. I mean, lots of them. But the whole thing is having consistency in each of them. Because so many, you know, I used to get different calls, and I'd go through several of them to get one I want. Consistency is what I was kind of taught from Keith and Charlie,
right.
As far as making it consistent across the board. So when Brent Dutton got me in this buzz, I even had them doing it down there, all them guys in Henderson, because that all stayed in a little circle. The L-22 with the Band-Aid on it, that's part of the history down here. The A-50 and stuff was right there in Union County, Horseshoe, Crab Orchard. It was all right here in one little circle, and Double Hesse Row across the river in Cape Girardeau. I mean, it was a tight-knit circle. And I'm telling you what, when them geese got from Canada to here, they hadn't heard nothing until they got here.
Right.
It was done. My goal was to make it better, to help people more understand the sport and pass it on. I can't remember what year it was, but I got inducted into the Legends of Hall of Fame. And it wasn't for what I had did for myself and the accomplishment. It's what in the Legends of the Hall of Fame is what you pass on to try to help others and try to make the sport better and not try to do something deceptive. I was just honest. I mean, I was going through rotator cuff surgery at the time that I got the phone call that I was, you know, would I accept the nomination and, you know, be here at this certain time. I mean, it was a big pickup in my life, just like a lot of things has been, you know, from the half-breed to the day I met Abe Lewis to the day I met, you know, Charlie Hess and Keith and Harold and David and Night and Hale. I mean, I've been so blessed as far as, but all these calls have got a reason, okay? But, I mean, when you try to do things for the right reason, usually it comes out pretty good. And I can lay down at night knowing I never tried to screw nobody. I may not have said that the way it's supposed to have been said, but that's the way I'm saying it. What are we talking about, politically correct? Rednecks ain't always politically correct. All right, so we went to the half-breed, and then we made a 3.5-inch half-breed without a shaved reed. Like I said, a lot of people, the half-breed, they thought it was too high-pitched. But I said earlier in the show, what you hear off the distance before you ever see geese a lot of times is,
ha!
Where they at? When you're looking. So, and they got 10 times what we got. So after that, we went to the short mag because I tried to make a half-breed look custom in a half-breed, and it's been tried to be copied I don't know how many times. But a half-breed, I cannot make out of wood or acrylic to make it sound exactly like a half-breed. And it can look exactly like one. Don't ask me why. I have no clue. Because I tried several times.
Out of wood or acrylic?
I tried it. I mean, the mouthpiece was exact. The measurements and everything was exact. I could not make one sound like I could make one of them. You know, because you got graphite, ABS, wood, acrylic, glass, polycarb. I've tried it in all of them. Them's the materials I make calls in.
What's the half-breed made out of?
Well, I've got them out of ABS. Different camouflages. When me and you both know, just the whatever you put on the outside, just a look. It's not. And you know, another thing I want to tell people, the barrel has nothing to do with the way a call sounds. The barrel only measures the length that your mouth is away from the reed. The application of the air that hits the reed, you're controlling that with the barrel length. It could be a piece of PVC pipe. It don't make no difference. It's what the end piece, what the thing comes out of. And I've heard guys say, well, if you polish acrylic certain ways, it sounds different. That's bullshit. Total bullshit. You know, it's these guys that have got these pumpkin heads out there that think they know, you know, that's garbage. And some of them tell them the barrel makes it sound different. That's garbage. Totally. Now, the reed thickness.
How do you really shape, feel,
Tim? What's that?
I said, how do you really feel?
Well, I mean, that when I heard that statement, I couldn't believe that. About the polished acrylic, you know, it makes it sound different. Polycarbonate is the closest you're going to get to acrylic.
Right.
ABS is the closest you're going to get to wood. A wood-absorbed sound, polycarbonate is it. The wood, the best way I can explain wood and the polycarbonate, if you go into a room and there's no curtains, drapes, mattresses, nothing in that room, you're going to get a acrylic sound. When you go into a room with carpet, bedding, sheets, drapes, you're going to have some sound sucked up. That's what you get in wood. That's the sound I like the best. I think it's the realest sound. I think that's the sound that puts them in there. That's why I make, and a hedge is probably the most finicky wood, but that's my favorite wood. I mean, I like my NP, I like my calls from the hedge, and you know, if they're not dried, if not kiln dried exactly the right, the moisture content,
right?
You'll have a problem with them cracking. But I just my favorite wood. Anyway, I told you if I get all the rampage, I'll be bad. But anyway, we went from the half breed, and then we went to the short mag because I couldn't make one that looked like I wanted to look. So the short mag, we come with the short mag. So then we went from that. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm going to tell you something. Out of these calls, another thing, out of these 17 calls, we have had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 that has won a world championship. 7 of the calls.
Wow.
Short Mag, the 100G007, the Super Mag, the Pro Super Mag, the Triple Crown, and the real thing. That has, in a live world scenario that's held in Easton, and the world. The live is a little different. But
right.
We went from, and that ain't nobody can say that. And we've had polycarbonate calls when the world and other major international and several major. It don't have to. It's not because it's made out of this fancy stuff that it's going to sound good. And people are brainwashed that it's got to be a $200 call or $150 call to win. That's bullshit. It's got to be the person behind it.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like if you give Mick Jagger a dadgum Gibson guitar, or you give him a hobo guitar. How you doing, Kent? Anyway, it's going to play because Mick Jagger's going to be able to play that guitar.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of them, though, they take the strings out of the guitar they played before and they put them in that call, the guts. So a lot of these calls you're hearing these guys they're blowing guts they've been blowing forever. That's where the Triple Crown guts come in.
Right.
Triple Crown guts is 9 wire burn feeds I had on the Triple Crown guts. I'll put them against anything out there.
Hey,
Kelly
real
Powers,
quick.
What's that?
Real quick, I don't want to get away from the calls, but I have 2 questions. We
yep.
only schedule this thing till 9:30. We're going to talk longer. It's just going to be recorded. It won't be live where these guys can listen to it.
Okay.
But there's a couple guys that had some questions.
Talk to me.
All right. Who, in your opinion, are the top 5? Top 5 goose and live goose contest callers right now? That's the first question.
That are active?
Yeah.
That are still competing?
Right.
Okay.
Okay, live and all right. And then the second question was, Jeff out there on the West Coast, he wants to know what you think of all the high-fiving, rock and roll, psycho-calling, decoy-pimping TV shows these days.
Ego.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Okay. All right. Then the top 5 goose and live goose contest callers right now. Who would you say those are?
That are actively still calling.
Right.
That's pretty rough. Let's see here.
You can think about it. I just wanted to pose the questions to you. They can come back and listen to the show later. You know.
Yeah, that's a pretty tough one because you know what? I know how a lot of them can blow a call, but a live goose is set up to be able to do some of that stuff like the Olympics, the high level of difficulty. Some of them sounds that you hear them doing that normally you don't hear them doing because you're not really listening. You don't get them that close because you're shooting them at 45 yards.
Right.
You know, or you not let them land and let the other 50 finish, you know, where you're really getting to hear the true thing or you've not went and listened to them. I'll have to think about that one.
All right. Okay.
I can tell him this. The live world has been held 6 years, and we've won it 5 and had 4 out of the top 5 places in the 6 years. So, I mean, I don't want to be biased on this, but, I mean, as far as making the sounds, it's pretty. I could probably come up with 5 names, but they're going to all be on my team.
Okay.
I'm just being honest with you because I mean it's some of them's trying to make it. Maybe Wade Walling. Wade Walling has got some really good sounds. I mean consistent. I mean real.
Some of them's trying to make it.
Full. I mean he's got some of them little wheezes and stuff I like.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, is that you?
Yeah, how you doing?
Okay, you need to turn your computer down because the feedback is coming through the feed.
Yeah, right? No, I can hear you.
Okay.
How you doing? Can you hear me?
Tim,
Jeff.
This is your brother.
Yeah, how you doing, Tim?
From Australia.
You doing all right, buddy?
New Zealand,
Australia. Right. Jeepers, don't start that.
That's right, that's right. We've kind of got off the wire here. We were going to talk about a bunch of stuff. We may have to do another one of these.
Okay. Oh, just do another one. I'll let you go. Obviously, you're a busy man.
Oh, you're fine, buddy. I'm glad to hear from. I'm glad to hear your voice.
Yeah, no, it sounds cool. I'm really pleased you did the show. You'll have to book in for another one. It sounds really good.
I think it'd be good if me and Hunter did one together.
Yeah, you better drag his little ass in there.
I'll drag his little ass in there and let him do the calling, and I'll just do the talking.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll leave you to it, big fella.
All right, brother.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Jeff.
Look.
All right.
Okay.
Man.
Yeah.
All right.
Good man. Look after yourself.
All right, brother.
Thank you. He's a good guy. Sound, I mean,
oh, he's a real good guy.
You're
tell you
lucky that when you travel like that, you run into people like that.
Hey,
you know?
He's a killer too.
Oh,
I mean, I've seen that real quick because he was so he knew what we had. And he drove like 2 or 3 or 4 hours. I don't remember exactly farther just to come there, and
right.
He's seen what we had. But I don't want to be a little bit. Hey, let's get back to this real quick.
Okay.
Let's just go over this, and we're going to have to. There ain't no way we ain't touched nothing here. The half breed, we went from the short mag. We tried to do something to do the half breed. 3 o'clock in the morning, I was in my basement, and the half breed, if you've ever seen one, it's got a mouthpiece and a barrel. Well,
right.
I had a short mag barrel, and I had a half breed there that I'd whittled down on. And I stuck that half-breed in that short mag barrel. I wonder what the hell this would sound like. Oh, my God, this is a little bit deeper. A little bit deeper. It's not as pitch. It's not got that crack like a half-breed. So that's where we come up with a long mag. And then we come up with a super mag. And then we come up with 100G. And I made them too hard to blow it when they first come out. If anybody wants, I'm trying to clear the. You know how all these crazy colors they got out there now?
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to clear the simple colors out that I thought was good colors just so I can get into some of the fancy colors because we got a real big thing we're going to do with the 100G style because I think the 100G and the 100G Mag's two of the best goose calls we've ever made as far as for price point, but we're going to do something a little bit different with them. But I've got to get rid of what I've got, and we've got them. We're closing them out, and there's nothing wrong with them. Then was the next two. And then we went from the Super Mag. We did more or less what I did with the 100G 007 and the Magnum. We went to the Pro Super Mag. Only thing the Pro Super Mag did is either the first year Hunter won the world. I think it was the second year he won the world. We pulled it out just with the cork. He pulled it out just a little bit with that cork, that clarinet cork we did for a while, that brass wrapped in that. You could pull it out, and it was still a tight fit. It was almost like the effect of a trombone, not pulling it while you're blowing it, but you could adjust it to where you want it to be. But people was letting that cork, and they wasn't taking care of it, so we went to O-rings. But that's how he pulled a Super Mag out, and that's how we came up with the Pro Super Mag. And that's exactly what we did there. And then we went, and then when Kelly, God bless him, he was one of my hottest tickets. And he had them guts. And he'd blowed on them, and Hunter'd blowed his hunting guts, and they swapped back and forth, but he'd come up with these guts. And, you know, he had that call with Richington for a while. And that didn't all work out exactly like I thought it should have. And I said, let's just do one. Because the thing about it, there's so many, these, especially these young guys, that they want to be somebody. They want to be a call maker. Well, I'm telling you, brother, it ain't what it's built up to be. I wouldn't want to be getting in that business today. Well, I did. I called my main guys and said, listen, we're going to do this deal. Didn't work out with the other company, and we're going to do this deal. So I give him X amount of dollars for the call, I mean, as far as per call we sell. And then I had them triple crown guts, and the guy said, you know, don't ever call me and have you make guts for me. I don't want no other molds because that's a wire burn feed 9 times. He said, I lost my hind end on this deal. I said, well, he wanted me to take them the third time. They was not even close. I said, I'm not going to sell a gimmick. It's going to be the real deal if I do this. So, anyway, the triple crown, then the real thing, the super thing, the triple thing, and then we've got the cackler and the old school, a speck in the snow, which makes 19 calls. I didn't even have the speck in the snow down here. And then the newest call we've got out this year is a G-overhauler. And it's a little bit different from the real thing. It's something we're still using. The triple crown, the real thing, the super thing, triple crown, real thing, super thing, triple thing, G-overhauler, all has the triple crown guts come standard in them. The only thing we're doing a little bit different on the, and if you guys get your calls out there and they got a bent tip reed, that bent is in there for a reason. You wouldn't believe how many people call me that, and I've seen a lot of the call makers now, they're bending their tips. I can't figure out how they come up with that, but they are. But that right there is, that makes the tip from not sticking in the channel, but it's got to be put together properly. On the goose side. Now, on the duck side, we've got the hen talk, which is a full double reed. We've got the sweet meat. So the hen talk was first, and then the my girl was the first call. That was the deal with the deal giving my best goose caller to another company. He was supposed to make me a duck call, and that was called the my girl. And then we come out with a my little girl. Then we come out with a back flapper, which that was another deal too. And we've changed that now to the back flapper plus, which we feel like we've got a call to compete at Stuttgart now. I don't know if they've noticed the website, but we offer $3,000 if you win the world with the black flapper plus. You get $2,000 and $1,000, or $1,000 and $1,000. I know after you win the world, it's $8,000. Then, but I mean, I didn't go after the guys. I knew it could blow a good up call. I just put the money out there. You know, it's like a box of chocolates down there. You know, it's so politics, and there's so many good callers out down there. I mean, it's the contest stage stuff is something I didn't really want to go after. And I made a bond with Butch Richenbach. He taught Hunter, and Hunter had won. He's won the first time he's down there, he won the junior world, and he won the intermediate world back-to-back. Butch Richenbach's the reason he did that. I give all the credit to Butch for teaching Hunter on duck calling, period. And I said he'd never blow another duck call but a rich in tone. But things have changed a little bit. That's why we offered this deal with a back flapper plus, and it has nothing to do with Butch whatsoever. You know, nothing whatsoever. I have the him and Charlie Hess was like grandfathers to Butch or to Hunter. But anyway, we went from the back flapper to the back flapper plus. Then we went to sweet meat, which is Ricky Dunn's inserts. We just wore them a little bit different, and then we went to Littlewood sweet meat this year. And it's a softer call. Some days it's not so windy. A lot of the guys have a place where it has a lot of echo.
Those double reeds that you're using?
The sweet meats.
Yeah.
It's the sweet meat call is the same thing. Ricky came out with that deal with a reed and a half, a reed and a dimple, and everybody came out with it. That's another copycat deal. All we did is put our mouth a little closer to the reeds, and we put our mouth a little closer to the reed here on the little woodsy sweet meat. And it's a lot of the times them calls, which we make these call floats, which are as good as megaphones, as good as a pressure of sound as anything, because sometimes when you're in an area, duck or goose calling, when you're in an area and there's a lot of echo,
right,
and you get them ones that just teeter-tottered, and my goodness, the sound's bouncing everywhere. Sometimes you need to soften that sound down, and more like what they call on a duck call, timber call,
right,
which on this little woodsy sweet meat, what we tried to do is we put the same insert. I did bend the top reed a little different, and it's just a softer call. I tried to go with a box store price, but people don't know me for a box store price. We don't sell calls for $30,
right?
But we are. I made a mistake.
Well, I'll tell you something about those inserts like that. Goose calls. I mean, they're either on or they're not. Okay. There's no gray area there with a goose call. With a duck call, there's a whole lot of variables with those things. You know, I cut my teeth on double reed duck calls, you know, and, well, I'll tell you what, I learned a ton from those old double reed Louisiana-style guts, you know. When I first started getting into this, huh?
You mean the Cajun?
Yeah,
Cajun calls, or are you talking about, you said double reed, you're talking about like what Robinson does?
No, they're
Cajun
no.
bamboo calls. I remember them with the twisting tongue. They were single reeds though.
Well, the ones I was talking about are the ones that are independent inserts. They've got a floating soundboard, wedge, and two reeds, sometimes with and without a dimple. And usually one's a 14 mil, the other one's a 10 mil. You know, there's just so many things you can do with a duck call. You mean you flip the reeds backwards, so you got a straight edge on there, or flip the reeds forwards, so you got the dog ears. Flip the 10 with the 14, it changes the sound entirely. Bend your top reed up the very last 16th of an inch of your reed. Literally grab it with a pair of flat-nosed pliers and just lift that monkey up and put a hard bend in it, you know.
I bend mine down.
You bend yours down?
Yeah.
Well, I just read material's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you what. I
the only thing them dog ears do is give it rattle, though.
Yeah, they do. And
you can cut the top end plumb out of a call, even a single reed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But there's so much stuff with a duck call, you know. I've said this probably 1,000 times. If I was just going to make one thing and one thing only, I would never touch a duck call because they can be some of the most finicky things on the planet trying to get them to sound right. And everybody has their own opinion of what right is. I mean,
you know what Butch Richenbeck told me?
What's that?
I said, Butch, I said, I'm having a hell of a time getting these things to where they sound right to my ear. He said, don't worry about it. He said, everybody's different.
There you go.
But I'm such a perfectionist on the goose calls. I want it to be where they'll do everything.
Right.
He said, ain't nobody blows the same. And I got as much respect in this industry for anybody as I do Butch Richenbeck. Charlie Hess, Mike McLemore, Gwen Scobie, Ken Martin's passed away. I mean, we've lost a whole bunch of them. We lost Mike this year. We lost Glenn last year and Charlie Hess.
In a lot of respects, what Butch is saying is right. I mean, you guys, you build goose calls that will literally do everything. But one out of 5,000 people that buy your goose calls has got the chops to do anything with it, let alone everything.
You know what, I told a guy the other day, I said, listen. He said, I can't get this thing to do nothing but cluck. I said, listen, I'm not trying to be arrogant, because I am not. I've never taught Hunter. I've always taught Hunter to respect his elders. And if a child or a kid comes up, you take all the time you need. But the only thing I can tell you is, I said, if you go out and buy a set of golf clubs, and they're Titleist, or Top Flight, or Callaway, or whatever you want to do it, do you think if you set them on a cart, and then Phil Mickelson comes up and sets his on a cart, the very same clubs, maybe different lengths and stuff, that you're going to be able to hit the ball as far as he is? You have to practice. You get what you put into it.
Absolutely.
And I think that's not just in calling. You know, I had a boy call me and said, hey, I'm playing bass. He's one of my good callers, Forrest Carpenter from Colorado. He calls me, and then Jake Stebby calls me out there. He's in school. I said, you know what? Goose and duck calling is way down the line. You have your education, you have your family, and you have this is fun time. I said, I'm still your friend. I don't try to buy these callers out here. I don't try to send these callers. Just like I did with that duck deal, I put that money up. I didn't try to go after the best callers and try to, you know, and that's what's happening so much. After they're done graduates out of college, like I said a while ago, it didn't make no different kind of guitar they got because they already got the internals to make it work. There might be a little bit of modification, but that's what's going on. It's not. There's a lot more things more important than duck and goose calling in life. What I'm telling you, and then both of them kids, I said, you know what? I still love you. You're still my buddies. And I said, do it when you're having fun. But Forrest is throwing a baseball. He had Tommy John surgery, and he's throwing a baseball back up in the 90s. You know, I hope he makes a career in I hope he does his baseball. I mean, you know, so many people's got to pitch your waterfowl and hunt. You're going to make a living. It's a small – we're very fortunate. I sure in the heck wouldn't be getting into it today if I, you know, from what I've been through. There ain't no way. Because, I mean, it's a God. If it's God's way, you'll be all right. But I'll tell you what, it's a long,
hard grind. And, you know, the thing about it is these guys see these things on TV. And just to be brutally honest with you, they see the stuff on TV and they think, man, that's the life. What they don't know is that stuff's filmed over a season. And those guys, they're out there and they're doing this, they're doing that. But they also got real jobs they have to go to. It's like the guys with all the bow hunting and the deer hunting stuff, you know. Those guys, they have real jobs they have to do. You know, it's a grind. And they do this other stuff on the side because they enjoy it. They love it. But people are under the impression that these guys, they just wander around at the SHOT Show and people throw sponsorship money at them and, you know, here's a new truck. Here's a whole boatload of trucks or, you know, what.
Right.
It doesn't happen that way. I mean,
That's right.
There's a couple guys out there that have kind of latched onto it, but... you know, they're not going to die and go away and give it up for somebody else.
No. I'll just tell you this. Somebody's listening out there and they want to buy a call company with a pedigree that we've got four decades. They can't take any of that stuff away from me. They can do all they want to do. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm for sale. Anybody out there wanting to buy a call company, I'm for sale. That's what I think about. I mean, the industry's tough, but if you think it's, you know, you can just go to the cream of the crop right at the top, it's going to cost you a little bit, but just come and get you some of it.
That kind of reminds me of those boys on that show, Swamp People. You think you can do it? Come on.
That's right. I've been saying that. And get down and cover up and come get you some. That's I've been saying that for a long time. And I mean, I love it. But you know what? Your body don't work as good as it gets as you get a little older.
Oh no. No, I hear you. You know that famous saying of yours. You know, anybody can kill geese if you're on the X. You know, you put your shells on goose poop. You know, you're good to go.
Yeah.
And the first time I read that, I thought, oh man, this is sending the wrong message. I could just see people out at the local golf course, you know, bagging up goose crap. And then
I can remember in Canada, we'd go out there and shine a flashlight, and Ron Latchall, that's another one that got a good one. He developed the first laydown blind. I mean, and he'd go out there and we'd shine them lights out there, and he'd call them Tipperellas, and they'd glow. I said that looked like nuclear active material.
I'll be
done. And you find him, and you know, you get on that little X, that little high spot. You know, some of these guys are telling you now to get on the side of a hill. If you're going to go out there on a goose, and you have the opportunity to go out there and scout, get on the highest spot in the field. That's where the 90% of the geese are going to. That's where they're going to hit first. They may walk low, but in the fence row, if you really want to kill them right, you need to get on the highest spot in the field.
Right.
I mean, that's always worked and it's some of them that said to get on the side of a hill, and that's garbage. So
I always like driving down the road and see these guys set up with their blind in a hedgerow or a fence row with a lot of high weeds and stuff, and the decoys are literally, you know, 40 feet out from the hedgerow or the fence row. It's like they don't make a goose stupid enough to land it. You know?
No, they're not. They're not really looking to do it the right way. They're just wanting to shoot at them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we end this, you got to come up with some names. You got to give me some names.
Some names on them callers.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to tell you what. he did it last year with the D. We just came out. He said when we made the half breed years ago, we came out with a half breed D, and I didn't even mention that. That's 20 calls now. I can't even remember all the third calls. But the D, we put the Triple Crown guts in, and he told me, Dad, one guy used to be with me one of the first year. I was a point behind him, and Hunter was 2 points behind him. And then the next year, Hunter was a point behind him. The next year, Hunter was a point behind him, or 2 points. I think 2 points that year. But he said, I'm going to win the live world this year. And he won it on that D.
Huh.
I'd have to put him at the top of the charts. Because I think the G overhauler that we came out with this year, I'd almost be willing to take bets. I don't even know. I don't have no clue what's going on, but that's as live. That's as goosey a call as I've ever. I personally, to make the sounds, some of them difficult sounds, it's as easy to make them on that call there as that I've ever put in my mouth. I can even make some of the sounds consistent. I'd have to put him there. I'd have to put Nate Cochant on that list from California. I'd have to put Forrest Carpenter on that list. I'd have to put Trevor Shanahan on that list. And probably Mitch Hughes. That's not no order.
Now,
that's
is that
not first? That's not first, second, third, fourth, and fifth.
All right.
Would that
be considered for live goose?
Live, making the live sound. I'm not going to say that they would be the ones that would win, but their level of difficulty would be, and I'd probably have to put, there's a few, there's so many of them go out there and try to blow a routine in a live goose contest. There's a meat goose contest and there's a live goose contest. A live goose contest is where you're trying to sound like a live, I mean, just sounds that they make coming and going from the flock.
All right.
That's what it's supposed to be simulated. But, hey, like I said, you get guys that them sounds are so far over their head that they haven't got a, you know, they haven't got the first clue. We'll tell you what, we'll end this thing. I had a bunch of stuff sitting down here. We never even got to this. I'm going to walk out here to the shop. But just like this sound right here. This is a G-overhauler.
Okay.
This sound right here. These are geese on the ground, young geese, and they do this right here. That's the gander of the goose, usually the goose. When the young ones, when they all land, like in these early seasons, if they land on water, they all swim together, but them little ones will always go. That's the gander and the other goose usually call them little ones together. And then they'll all swim together, and a lot of them guys will shoot them on the water when they swim together. That's why I don't like that nuisance stuff, because they're family-oriented. When they, right. when they raise and they fight until they all, that's how they get them grouped, them big bunches. When they raise, when they get the little ones, the goslings, then they all get together and they're all protective of them. That's when you see these big flights. We see the small ratio down here, but in Canada, that's how you get them big bunches. They leave Canada. They leave the areas that they that's one of the sounds that them little ones make, and I've heard them making it around here, and that's one sound that they're gonna probably hear it in the live world this year that they haven't heard in the live world. That call I can even do it on.
And which call was that?
That was the new G-overhauler.
Okay.
Which it's got a top and a bottom. But the contrast. That's what I was saying earlier. I've said it two or three times about a high and low, low and high, and a moan. That's all I was doing right there. And it's from top to bottom, it's pretty consistent.
Your calls, do you tune those to the greaters or the lessers or somewhere in between?
Well, if people ask me and they want graders or lessers, either one, they all respond to a pitch.
Right.
They respond to that pitch that gets their attention. Then you have to control it because so many of these things they're making, they're easy to blow, they're high-pitched, and that's all you got. They're monotone. You have to be able to get that stuff down at the end. But still be able to. There's not a lot of them will go both ways.
Right.
I mean they'll all blow monotone, and they sound good. Not taking it away from none of them. They all sound they sound good. But then a lot of it's harder to get that. Most people and it's not the call, as much as it is the person. Because they don't know how to hold their hands properly, and that's a whole nother subject. And
okay.
Some of it's been taught, and there is a good one out there. But when we get done doing this DVD, and it may be 2 years, but I'll tell you what, it'll all be said out there because it was only taught one way, and I taught the way that the guy taught it back in 19 on the Short Read Way video DVD. I made it in 1993. Because in 1993-94, with two geese and a blind, two men and a blind, two geese and a blind, we killed the all-time record in Southern Illinois of 2,724 geese in 42 days.
Wow.
And and I've got it on here. Tim met Charlie and Keith Hess and developed the short read system. Called it was called the Short Read Way. And I mean, it's out there available still yet. It's an archive like me, but you know, it's still a good teaching tool, but. the philosophy out there now as far as was with the two fingers, and I called it, you know, when you take your index finger and your middle finger and you bring them, when you start to bring them two down, the middle, the index finger, it wants to stick out farther than the other one, and that creates a V and a notch in the call.
Right.
And that's why we taught the half-breed, but that's the only way I taught it then. Well, that's the only way that individual taught it here lately. But the thing about it, after that tape was made, you can extend your hands like a telescope on the end of that call, on the goose call, and extend, you know, so many guys want to put their hand right against the band or right against the barrel. Well, you might as well cut some of your fingers off. Use what God gives you, your hands.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, like I said, we've just kind of really just touched the base because I had some other things I was going to talk about, but I'm about talked out.
Well, you did good. I mean, we went almost nonstop for 2 hours here, bud.
Yeah.
I mean, honest to God, if this was a standard terrestrial radio station.
I told you when I get started, it's hard to, you know, because I've got so much in my head, and it takes me a lot of time to think.
Well, that's good. I mean,
you know, I mean,
honest to God, this is
you know, I did make a note or two, but I had to write the call. Just like I told you, I wrote the stuff down, and then I end up with 20 calls. You know, I mean, it's you know, I want to talk about, you know, me and Hunter Moore.
Right.
You know, there's no father and son will ever match what we did. I don't care. It's not going to say that it'll never happen, but the chances of having the youngest son to ever, you know, win the senior world and win the first, the senior world, the junior world, the Mason-Dixon, and the junior world duck in 1 year, that's pretty tough odds.
Pretty good stuff.
25 years old, winning over 90 times. I've won over 100 times, and I'm 55.
Right.
You know, but I'm worst up, and I'm pretty well done.
Well,
but that one duck call, we came out with a D overhauler duck call
right
this year, and we blowed it in February. And Butch and Charles Petty, which is two people I respect in the duck calling industry, there was 20 some teams, and we won by 12 points up there in February. So I got me a win in this decade or in this year. So I've still got a streak going,
okay.
But I've just got to have a little help.
Okay.
I got to have somebody carry me.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think we need to have you guys on again sometime soon. So.
Well, Hunter, I mean, like I said, if Hunter hadn't been here, that'd be a good deal because we can get on, and he can do some things that I don't even know how he does it.
Okay.
And I don't, you know, that the people listen. I don't want people thinking that I'm biased. Which I tell you what, I want somebody that can do everything. But hell, the live world pretty well speaks for itself pretty good. And you've got 6 years, we won 5 years, and I'll tell you another one. I'd have to add and make it instead of five, it's six. I think that Josh Neuwiler is one of the most talented kids I've ever heard blow a call to, which he's not a kid now, but I can still call him a kid.
Right.
He's very talented. He won with Sean Mann's flute call, and he can do things. He can blow a goose call with his nose. No, he's very talented. I mean, he's the kind of guy who can pick any call up and make it go. Back in the day, I hadn't even. He said, I could blow this thing to pieces. But I mean, he's a very talented kid too, and he's the one that won the one live world, and we had second, third, fourth, and fifth. But I mean, it's not like I'm just saying that because, well, which one is Trevor Shanahan? He's not with me, and Mitch is not with me. But
right.
Mitch is a good kid. He blows for John Taylor, and he's a good kid, and John's a good fella. I've been around him, a lot of them guys every year, and it's been a I just can't tell somebody something just to get them out of my hair. I got to tell them the truth. Taught Hunter.
That's
he gets around them young
quality.
Guys. He tells them the truth. If they're good enough to figure it out, after he tells them. But I've told him, I said, you know what? We're just going to have to still be honest. But here's a couple things I didn't say.
Well, here's something I got to tell you right now. I got about 14 to 15 seconds to get this out, and then we're going to lose airtime here.
All right, bud.
But I appreciate you coming on the show.
No problem.
I'll be in touch with you in the very near future about talking to you about you and Hunter coming on together.
All
It was an awesome show. The numbers are going to just rock your mind how many people listen to this tonight.
Well, you know, if they want to listen to old Redneck, that's fine. But I started this thing a long time ago, and I still put my pants on the same way.
Good man. And your call company is for sale for the right price.
Yeah, for the right price. www.timgrounds.com. Just come get yourself.
Throw money at me. All right. Well, Tim, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you coming on, brother. Okay?
All right, man.
Thank you.
All right,
ladies and gentlemen, that is the conclusion of the show tonight. That was Tim Grounds. That was an awesome show. 2 hours, and I guarantee we didn't even scratch the surface. So, anyway, thanks again. God bless. Good night. I'm gonna go watch some of the Republican National Convention. So, anyway, y'all have a great evening, and we'll be back next week. All right? Good night, and God bless.